Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. I'm really passionate about what we're going to be talking about today because it's very personal for me since I have a son who is in recovery and ADHD, also with bipolar 2, struggling with addiction. But before I start getting into the topic, I just want to remind everyone who is living in the Los Angeles area that I run a really powerful adult support group for ADHD on Wednesday nights. It's held at the Center for Learning Unlimited. That's 2785 Pacific Coast Highway in Torrance, California. And it's Wednesday nights from 7:30 to 9. I usually get there at 7 in case anybody wants to come early and just talk to me about how their week went. It's a powerful meeting. We do a lot of work from the inside out. If you get a chance to listen to my other podcast, you'll hear more about what we do at that meeting. A lot of mindfulness, meditation, a lot of emotional individuation, growing up emotionally, which in this population at times can be very difficult. Also, I want to remind everyone that my book, ADD Land, The Gift of ADD, just kind of a fun book that really highlights the gift, the creative gift of ADD with all the very highly successful people in this world that have ADD and really done so well. It's very helpful, especially for children and adolescents, so that they can really look and see, wow, look how successful some of these people have been, and this is what I want to do, and I can accomplish that. I can do that. So that book is for sale on Amazon, and it's also for sale on my website, which is missadd.com. And a portion of the proceeds from the book go to CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD, a nonprofit organization that I represent. I'm on the board in the South Bay, and also to St. Jude Hospital, which I have a lot of passion. I'm sure everybody does who listens and sees those commercials on TV. They don't turn anybody away who doesn't have the money that can afford to go there. Also, I wanted to mention to everyone again who is in the Los Angeles area that on May 22nd, Thursday, May 22nd from 6:45 to 9, I'm going to be speaking at the West LA CHAD, which is different than the South Bay CHAD. It's in Culver City, located down the street from Sony Studios, and I'm going to be talking about the gift of ADD. I'm going to be discussing symptoms of ADHD as stated in the DSM-4 versus the DSM-5. That's the diagnostic statistical manual that myself and other therapists, it's our Bible. Stages in the diagnosis of ADHD. Also children, adolescents, and adults and what they will need to embrace their creative mindset. It's really important to keep that self-esteem up, which we're going to be talking about today. Mindfulness, emotional individuation, and self-awareness. Self-awareness, to me, has always been the first step in getting better. And that's exactly what happened to me when I changed myself about 5 years ago and really started to feel better and get better in so many ways and get in control of my negative symptoms of ADHD. But I still laugh and have a good time. We're also going to be working on communication, which is a big area in the population of ADHD. A lot of adults with ADHD struggle with communication, especially with their significant others. We're going to be talking about organizational skills, and we're going to give some help with the negative symptoms of ADHD, such as procrastination, emotional regulation, inability to focus, follow through, losing things, putting your keys in the refrigerator, etc. Okay, so if you're around, I'd love to see you there. That would be just great, and I will remind you again next week. So today the topic is addiction. The word addiction begins with ADD, and it's a known fact that there is a higher rate of addiction, population of ADD. That's definitely a known fact. So let me give you some statistics that I know. So 7% of children between the ages of 3 and 17 have ADHD. It might be a little higher, might be closer to 11% at this point in time. 40% of children and teens have co-occurring disorders. So the co-occurring disorders that I'm going to highlight are oppositional defiant disorder, which I'm sure many of you out there that are listening are familiar with, dysthymic disorder. Now, this is a chronic depression. It's not a major depression. It's a chronic depression. So it's kind of like we go along and we're doing okay and we dip a little bit and we're looking around and we're seeing people are moving forward and we're not. So it's not you can't get out of bed or you can't take a shower. It's just that life isn't really as happy as you would like it to be. One of the ways it manifests itself is in low frustration tolerance or emotional regulation. Another thing is anxiety. Anxiety is very high in the world of ADHD. I'm going to stop for a minute and just remind anybody who's listening, if you want to call in and ask me some questions, the number to call in is area code 917-889-7025. Okay. So now that we're talking a little bit about co-occurring disorders, there's studies that have been done on adolescents and adults and have found co-occurring alcohol abuse disorders ranging from 17 to 45% and drug abuse from 9 to 30%. These studies have shown that people with ADHD are more likely to develop substance abuse problems at a younger age and more likely to require lifetime substance abuse treatment, such as Alcoholics Anonymous and or therapy or an inpatient or outpatient rehab facility. Medication treatment for ADHD, and this is very interesting because I know that there are many of you out there that struggle with giving your kids medications. I struggled with it as well. Many people come to me and they ask me, you know, should they? Well, first of all, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I have been a coach for 21 years, and a lot of my own life experience having ADHD, being medicated at one time myself, I'm not anymore. Both my boys having ADHD and my younger son also being on the autistic spectrum, I did eventually put them on medication. The reason I decided to do that was because I noticed that their self-esteem was suffering. So that's the answer that I usually give to parents, and I encourage them to please see a good psychiatrist, somebody who they feel that they can really communicate with. That's a very important piece of the medication, is somebody that you can really talk to. But medication treatment, ADHD, reduces the risk of substance abuse by 85%. Amongst teen patients with ADHD. So that's really something to consider, especially if your child is in the hyperactivity, impulsive type of ADHD. So let me backtrack a little bit. I told my son this morning I wasn't going to talk about him by name. I don't think he's really ready yet. At some point, I'm sure he'd love to be on the show and tell his own story. But what I will tell you is that from the time he was 14 years old, he was into marijuana, stopped using that. He's now 26, soon to be 27, and recently went into recovery, alcoholic and gambler. So he's loving the program, taking it one day at a time. We've been doing a lot of conversing back and forth. I also am in program. I got back into Al-Anon. And I'm going to be working the steps there, finding hopefully a very strong sponsor, because being a therapist doesn't mean that I can help my son. I am very humbled in that process. So I'm working the program as he's working the program, because I do not want to feed into his disease. But let me tell you the story of what happened here. I believe that had I been more diligent about staying on top of what he was doing when he was younger, I want to say, I want to believe that very possibly things could have gone a little differently, but what happened was my guilt got in the way. You ask guilt from what? Well, we moved all over this country, and this was with their stepfather. It wasn't their real dad. And we moved from New Jersey to Ann Arbor, Michigan, then to Los Angeles, and they moved during the very pivotal times in their lives when they had were making friends and feeling good about themselves. And actually, my older son was moved out here to L.A. when he was 17 years old. So he was a junior in high school at the time and had a difficult time fitting in. So guess what? The way he fit in was through drugs and alcohol. And my guilt, I turned my head to a lot of things that I was seeing. So I was living, as I like to say, in that big river in Egypt called denial and really seeing things but turning my head because I was upset. I was angry at myself for allowing all this moving to go on. I saw his pain. He really didn't have a strong bond or relationship with his real dad. Either did my younger son, but he just kind of took off. And it escalated when he was a freshman in college. He had something awful happen to him. He had a tumor develop on his femur. It ate his entire femur bone from the inside out. He had surgery. Thank God it wasn't malignant. And he was left with a titanium rod in his leg with cadaver bone that was built over that. And that is when I really saw, after that surgery, when I saw his drug and alcohol abuse really go up. So I pulled him into rehab at that point at 19. He was in outpatient rehab, and he was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he just didn't want to be there. So that lasted for about 6 months. He came and told me and his stepdad at the time, who's no longer in our lives, that he believed he wasn't an alcoholic. Of course, I wanted to believe that, because I didn't want a son of mine to be an alcoholic. Oh, my God, how could I live with that? So he left and went on his merry way and has been hiding a lot of stuff since then. So that really is my tale of woe. But I have such a passion about this right now. And I have clients, I have young adolescent clients who are using marijuana and they're thinking that this is okay. And I keep explaining to them that this is illicit. It's not, it's against the law. It's not legal. And their parents are missing a lot of this. They're, like myself, I think these are parents, a lot of them that, two of them are working. There's a lot of guilt because there isn't a lot of time spent with the children, productive time. So they make up for that by giving them money or, you know, letting them do things that the kids say they want to do. They let them run the house, which is something I would suggest for everybody who's listening. Please, please don't let your children run the house. You're the hierarchy in the family. They're the children. That's a big danger zone for kids. And in fact, it doesn't make them feel safe at all. It makes them feel scared when they have that kind of power. So let me just read a little bit more about the characteristics that make the development of an addiction in ADD more likely. So here's a big thing. Poor academic and professional performance. What this creates is a low self-esteem. So what I would suggest everybody out there does is don't focus, especially with your adolescent or your child, don't focus so much on the grade that they're receiving. Focus more on the effort that they're putting in. Give them a lot of accolades for the effort, and don't pay for A's or B's. Don't do that. You're giving them a message that what they do is more important than who they are. When my boys went off to school every morning, before they left, I would say to them, guys, school is what you do. It is not who you are. So I never rewarded them for A's and B's. I rewarded them for effort. So when I knew that all their homework assignments were handed in, and even if they still ended up getting a C, I would either get them a tutor or I would figure out that, you know what, this is the best that they're going to do. My boys are both very, very bright, as the majority of this population is, but they measure themselves through what the parents say to them. Low self-esteem is a big indicator of drug and alcohol abuse. They're going to run to something that's going to make them feel better, and if they're not excelling in school, they're going to find the group of kids that aren't excelling also. They're going to be hanging out with them, and trouble's going to begin to start. And here's something. Make sure you know who your children are hanging out with. This is very important. I always invited my children's friends over our house. They loved to be there. I made it fun. I was always in the background kind of listening. Yes, I made a lot of mistakes, especially with my older son, but I made sure that I knew who their friends were. That was something that I knew. As my older son got older, that was more difficult for me to know because he was off, he was driving, and it was difficult. I beg every one of you who are listening, please, please make sure you know what your young adolescents and older adolescents are doing. Car, driving, this is an important thing. It's a privilege. And if they're using marijuana, if you have any inkling at all that they're drinking or using marijuana, they don't get their license. You know, here in California, and I think it's going up in a year to 18, the driving age is 16. Area of the brain for depth perception does not develop until we're 18 years old. So I don't know how we could ever put a weapon, a car is a weapon, in the hands of a young child at 16 years old and expect them to have the responsibility of somebody who's much older or the brain function of somebody who's older to be able to drive safe in a safe way and in a productive way. So again, I can't say this enough. You have to make sure you know what's going on. Talk to your children. This is a big one. If there's a history of chemical dependence, alcohol abuse in your family, if there's the disease of alcoholism or drug abuse in your family, you need to let your children know this. Please don't be afraid to talk to them about that. Explain to them what the disease is all about. Find documentaries on TV to watch. Read books together. Let them understand how dangerous this is and how this can absolutely ruin their life. Give them information. What I find with young adolescents and older ones that I work with, the more information I give them, the more able they are to process and do more of the right thing. This is very important. So communicating with your children, finding their passion, again, a big one. A lot of us in this population struggle in the world of academics. Let's find some creative mindset that really turns them on. When my boys and I moved here to Los Angeles, they went to Palos Verdes High School. Palos Verdes High School has an incredible program called Live from 205. Live from 205 is a live news program that airs two times a week, and they have these incredibly creative kids that put this show together. So I made sure that my older son got into that program. So he was part of that, and during that time, he was very happy. My younger son ended up in the program. My older son was a news director. Mike was a producer when he was coming up, also as a senior. And here's what happened. The gentleman who ran the program, he became the policeman. So if the guys got less than a C, they were off the program. And so I didn't have to get into the grade thing with them ever, which I really didn't like to do at all, but other parents as well, because he did. So it was a great way to keep them connected to academics in a positive way through this very creative program. Now, I know that not all the schools around the country will have these kind of programs, but if your children are artistic, please get them art lessons, take them to art schools, get them involved. If they like to play instruments, get them lessons if they want lessons, or, you know, get them on the internet so they can teach themselves about playing the guitar. anything that makes them happy in their creative world is going to keep them more focused, school and getting moving forward in life, and less focused on using substances like alcohol or marijuana. Okay, trouble forming meaningful relationships. A lot of us in this population have trouble forming meaningful relationships, both friendships and love relationships. So this tends to lead to isolating. Okay, I don't know how many of you out there have a child who is ADD and attentive. I do. My younger son is. And he at times tends to isolate. He has some social issues because he's on also the autistic spectrum. He's NLD, which is the lower end of the spectrum, but also ADHD. So, you know, I worked with him a lot. He's doing better. But at times, I can still see him isolating. He, unlike his brother, does not use drugs or alcohol at all. And I think a lot of it is watching the struggles that his brother went through. But also, he'll say to me, nah, I don't need to fool around with my brain. It was fooled around enough with by itself. So he will not do that. But for a lot of people that I know, they'll use alcohol. They'll use marijuana. They'll use some form of drug so that when they go places, they feel like they can interact with people. It relaxes them a little bit. So they also lack a strong social support. So they feel very lonely at times. If you're seeing this, if you see your child in the house, in front of the TV all the time, 7 hours a day on video games, that's another addiction, you need to figure out how to help them make some friends. I always, for my younger son, called and made the play dates. Even when we moved here and he was in eighth grade, I would call people that had kids his age and I would make sure I got them over so that he didn't isolate. I didn't let him sit in his room all day, and I also did not allow him to sit in front of the video games for 7 hours a day. He needed to get up, get out, invite friends over. We had a basketball hoop. Get out, go to the movies, go to the mall, have some fun, enjoy yourself. I always knew who his friends were. But that loneliness is something you really need to keep an eye out about, because they're more likely in this population to suffer from depression, and isolation and depression equals substance abuse. So please keep an eye out for any kind of change that you see. Many times parents will come to me and say, you know, my son or my daughter is 13, 14, and all of a sudden I'm noticing that they're really not themselves. They don't seem like themselves. And I immediately say, drug test them. And, of course, they get their backup. What do you mean? They're not on drugs. Let me tell you something. 9 times out of 10, they find out they're using marijuana. So you got to make sure you stay on top. If there's any kind of change, if they become apathetic, that's a big one. If all of a sudden they stop caring about school, if all of a sudden they're changing the type of kids they're hanging out with, you got to get in there. You got to find out what's going on. You got to talk to them. You got to get them out. Don't lecture them. Talk to them. Because where adolescents are concerned, you control them, you're going to lose them. You got to coach them. That's the biggest thing. And if anybody listening needs help, please contact me. Even if you're not in the Los Angeles area, I Skype with people all the time. You can call me on the phone. We can set up a session. I'll do anything I can to help. Like I said at the beginning of this program, this is personal. This is a passion for me. Okay, so moving on. People with ADHD may suffer an altered dopamine response. Okay, so let me quickly explain to you about the chemicals in the brain. So I'm going to just name a few. We've got serotonin, which is responsible for depression and anxiety. We've got norepinephrine, which has a lot to do with the ADHD. We've got dopamine, which is the mood chemical. And what happens a lot of times is people with ADHD, they really have a depleted amount of dopamine. And dopamine is what we call the reward center. It's the reward center chemical in the brain. So when this chemical is released in lesser amounts, and that's what happens a lot in the world of ADHD, ADHD adolescent or adult struggles because their ability to feel normal pleasure is less than others. That's really important. Their ability to feel normal pleasure. So just normal, everyday kind of going outside, experiencing the day, or just maybe, you know, you're saying to your kids, come on, let's go out, let's have breakfast, I don't want to do that, because that's normal pleasure. They're looking for more than that because of the depleted dopamine. So they may need to increase up to normal pleasure through alcohol or drugs. That's not what you want. Absolutely the wrong thing. It's not going to help them at all. Talk to your psychiatrist about how to increase that dopamine supply in the brain so you're doing it through prescription drugs if you have to. You can also do it through meditation and mindfulness. I know I talk a lot about mindfulness, but it changed my life. My dopamine receptors, I'm sure, have increased because I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. And it's not because of any kind of substances that I'm using or even medication, because I'm not on any. Let's talk a little bit about marijuana. So marijuana is called the gateway drug. What do I mean by that? The gateway drug is a drug that will lead you to other substances, to other drugs. A good comparing drug with that is ecstasy. A lot of kids talk to me about they do marijuana, they do ecstasy as well. They go to raves, they go to dances. Ecstasy is a very, very dangerous drug. Ecstasy was actually, it was made in England many years ago, and it was actually made for depression. And it was an outstanding drug for depression when it was pure. When it got to the United States, it wasn't accepted that way. I believe the pharmaceutical companies didn't want to put it on the market. So it got on the street. And when it got on the street, it started to be cut with different chemicals. You know, rat poison, believe it or not, heroin, you name it. That's what it was cut with. Methamphetamines. So there was a story about 2 or 3 years ago about a 15-year-old little girl here in Los Angeles. She took ecstasy. She died from the first time she took it. So they stopped raves for a while, I think, downtown L.A. I'm not sure whether or not they're allowing them to happen again, but this is a drug that what happens when you take it, there's a surge, a rush of serotonin. So it makes you feel like you're Superman, like you're on top of the world, that absolutely nothing can go wrong. You're happy. You feel connected. It's the rush is incredible. But when they come off the drug, their brain is depleted of serotonin, completely depleted, and that's when they really start to break down. There have been stories about kids committing suicide, so please be very aware of what your kids are doing, who they're hanging out with, what they're taking. Marijuana is an illegal drug. I've had kids to tell me it's legal. No, it's legal in Colorado, God help us, and I know both states start with a C, but this is California. So it is not legal. It seems to be, though, the drug of choice in the ADHD population. Many of the kids that I see or have seen in the past have told me that it helps them with sleep and with their anxiety. Listen, do not get them a medical card, okay? Their brains are young and still developing, and the THC level in marijuana today is 21 to 23%. And when we were young, and, you know, some of us smoked marijuana in the 70s or the 60s, the THC level was 6%. THC is the chemical in marijuana that attaches to fatty parts of the body. And the most fatty parts of the body, believe it or not, is in the brain. When it attaches there, it kind of fries the brain. It freezes it. It stops it from that growth pattern that happens, that neuroplasticity that goes on constantly. And that's why I talk about if you see apathy, if you see your children coming home and not caring anymore, that's apathy. That's something that's happening, and it may be related to marijuana. So I'm going to have my husband get on the phone, because even though he doesn't have addiction, and I don't believe anybody in his family has addiction. And here's something very important. There's no addiction in my family. There's no disease of addiction on either side, both my mother and my father. I rarely ever saw my father drink, never saw my mother drink. When I was in my 20s, drank too much but was able to stop. And I don't know where this disease came from with my son, but he actually really does have the disease. So it doesn't matter if there's a history. It can happen without the history. And a lot of it is related to ADHD, and a lot of it is related to just the society that we live in. So, Steve, talk a little bit, if you would, about when you were growing up and what happened in high school and the addiction that you saw, and also how you were able to stay out of that.
Okay. What did I see in high school? Well, what I saw in high school was a lot of parents who wanted to be their kids' friends.
Which still goes on
yeah,
today.
Yeah, still goes
yeah.
on today.
Right.
Basically, there would be drinking at people's houses because their parents usually knew.
Right. And that's still going on because you and I, when we met, we discovered that we both had children that were in the same grade
right.
At Palos Verdes High School.
Right.
And, yeah, there's a lot of bartending
right.
that goes on up here in Palos Verdes, in every place, not only Palos Verdes. It's all over the place, and so much of it is because, as you just said, they want to be their friend.
Yeah, they feel like, well, you know, as long as I'm involved, I can kind of monitor what's going on. And to some extent, maybe they are, but the problem isn't so much they're monitoring. The problem is that they're feeding something that is getting going. It's
right.
like they're almost encouraging it. What I think a lot of parents failed to realize and continue to fail to realize, and I failed to realize, in fact, when I was a parent, still am, but when my child was younger, is that your kids are listening to everything that we're saying.
Right.
They're really looking to us for a direction or for answers. They really are. Even though they act like they don't listen, even though they act like that we know nothing and they know everything and they're going to live forever, I think that they really do hear us, and we need to, through consistency, give them the boundaries that they need
right.
to follow something. So at least they have an excuse. I mean, like, for example, you know, the excuse of like, oh, my God, if my father ever caught me, if I ever came home drunk or if they smell alcohol in my breath, I'm dead. No, guys, I can't drink.
Exactly.
I mean, just some way to get out
right.
of it.
Right, and the other thing we yeah. talked about a little while ago, because we were talking a little bit about the show, was, you know, how powerful is it to lead by example, okay? So let's say that you and your husband or, you know, single parent as well, just decide to go out for the night. You know you're not an excessive drinker, but you know you may have one or two drinks. Now,
mm-hmm.
one or two drinks will get you a DUI. There's no question in my mind,
mm-hmm.
okay? So you show your children, this is leading by example,
mm-hmm.
that you're calling a car service
right.
to pick you up, or you have a designated driver.
Right.
One, and your children, as Steve just said, they may not look like they're watching, but they're watching. And they're seeing, wow, that's really big. Because let me tell you what I tell the kids that I work with. There is zero tolerance for getting into a car if you've had a drop of alcohol not allowed in the car, because it impairs your ability to drive and function normally.
Right.
Right? Okay. So I think that would be a big one. I just want to share the story that my son shared with me this morning. He was up in Marin County. I believe that there was some kind of charity thing going on, and he was bartending and sharing with everybody up there because, yes, he's a bartender, but he tells me he's doing okay. It doesn't trigger him. There are plenty of people who, you know, have alcoholism, and they're bartenders. This is how he makes a living right now, and he really makes a very good living, so he couldn't give that up. But he shared with everybody yesterday that he was clean and sober, and he said in the course of the day, a little 12-year-old boy came up to him and said, "Can you please show me how to make a martini?" And he said, "Mom, I was completely blown away and said, no, I'm sorry. I really can't do that for you. So he went to the next bartender and asked the next bartender, and the bartender said, yeah, I can show you how to do that. And he looked at my son and said, you know what, I don't have a shaker. And my son said to him, well, maybe that's God's way of telling you not to teach this 12-year-old how to make a martini. And then he said to me, I said, who's this talking? Is this me talking? Anyway, turned out the little boy learned how to make the martini. And so my son said to him, honey, why do you want to learn how to make a martini? And he said, well, my birthday's coming up. I asked for a shaker, and because my mom makes them for herself every afternoon, and I want to be able to make them for her. Well, isn't that wonderful? That's just great, yeah. So, see, these are the kind of things that are going on in our society that really make me sick. Another terrible story that I just heard last night, a friend of mine who's a therapist, we went to graduate school together, was at, I believe, the Grove having dinner, and sitting next to him was a couple with a little baby who was 8 months old. And the little baby, of course, must have been tired and cranky. So the mom kept dipping her straw into her margarita and giving it to the child to suck on. And eventually the child fell asleep, and this isn't funny.
Oh my God.
I mean, this is really sad. This is a sick society that we live in to think that this is okay. So, you know, that's why I brought these two stories up, because we're who our children look to for answers. We are their role models. We are their first role models. And it's just killing me.
I'm going to share something also. I'll never forget how impressed I was. My son, who is also ADD, for a long time before, he has a career now as a professional photographer, but before that, he was studying police science. So he was on his way to become a policeman.
Thank God he didn't.
Yeah, well, anyway, the thing is that one of the things he learned is about alcohol and how little alcohol it takes to impair you. And to this day, whenever he goes out with friends or whenever he's going to go out, you know, to clubs, he always tries to pool together with a number of people and usually suggests let's either someone's going to be a designated driver or let's all pool together and get a car.
I love it.
Let's rent a – we'll get a taxi. We'll just call the taxi. We'll get his number. We'll say, hey, look, you know, when you come back, when we want to get back, is there a number where we can call you? You can come
right.
pick us up.
Right.
Of course, the taxi driver would love that.
Right.
And so they end up being able to go clubbing and get as wild and crazy as they want, and they never set foot in a car.
Right.
You know,
they're
driving. You know,
yeah.
No one's driving a car. And so everyone's able to do this and be safe.
Right.
And I one time asked him, I said, why do you do this? And he says, well, because he says, I don't want to put my life in harm's way. He says, whether it be me or somebody else driving, I wouldn't want to be a car with somebody who's had too much to drink and this is my only way home.
Right.
That's a horrible place
and
to be.
And you know what? I do know, for those adults who are listening, I do know that there are and I believe it's through AA. You might want to look this up on the internet. I'm sorry that I didn't before I started the show, but I believe that there's a way to get free rides home if you don't have, you know, the money for Uber or the Lyft, which can be pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I believe through AA that there are places you can call to get some free rides home. And I think it's really important to educate your child. Here's the other thing. Even if they're not drinking, oh, my God. You have to talk to them about never getting in the car with anybody.
That was one of the things that with my youngest daughter in high school, I told her, look, I don't care how – when she'd go off to parties, I'd say, look, I don't care how late it is. You call me. Don't you dare get in a car
right.
where someone's been drinking. And a number of times – we got the call.
Right.
And sometimes I wasn't happy. I wasn't thrilled. It was 2:30 in the morning. It was 3 in the morning. And I went out and picked them up and took the boyfriend home and took her home.
Yeah,
and I wasn't screaming and yelling
at
them.
No, I never did either.
Because, you know, like, hey, it's this late and how dare you, you know, someone can't drink or can't drive because they've had too much to drink and you guys shouldn't have been drinking. And granted, I probably should have been saying you shouldn't have been drinking.
Right.
Okay, because that wasn't.
Well, they
know,
weren't.
But the point is, and the most important thing is they were doing the responsible thing
right.
by not getting in the car, calling me,
Right.
To be taken home.
Right, and they, because, you know, I did the same thing. And I just want to tell everyone that if your child calls you, please don't get angry at them, because they're not doing anything wrong. They're actually doing something really right. And they're saving their life. They're saving the lives of others. And just pick them up with a smile on your face. You know, I understand sometimes it can be late. And, you know, curfew for, you know, young adolescents shouldn't be 3 in the morning. You know, Mike's curfew when he was a junior in high school was midnight, you know. I mean, that was it. You couldn't be out after that. And also when they're first driving, they have their own curfew.
Right.
You know, they can't. But I think it's very important, as Steve and I are saying, that you really just approach this from a happy place if they're calling you in the middle of the night and waking you up. I didn't sleep anyway when my kids were out. Normally I would.
Neither did I. So.
Yeah, I'd be awake. So I guess you worked in the music industry for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You were the general manager of Warner Brothers Music. What a great job during the 70s. And you got to hang out with all those wonderful assholes that were drinking and smoking and high and cocaine and, you know, everything else. And you were able, the most amazing thing is, you were able to stop yourself, even though you have ADD. You didn't become addicted, and you could have very easily.
I think the reason why I didn't is because of the fear of the knowledge, knowing that I could very well become addicted, and that if I did become addicted, it would be my own fault.
Right.
I believed that I could become addicted to anything.
Right.
And so because of that, I was always mindful of that possibility and tried to monitor my use of all those strange and crazy chemicals.
So one of the things that you and I talk about a lot, because we have a lot of fun in this family because all of our children have ADD, it's just great, is we talk about the creative mindset and how the more creative you are, at times, I guess the more fearful you become, and sometimes that fear can become dissipated by using substances.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew a lot of very talented guitar players, drummers, singers, you know, music producers, all these different types of people that were into this.
Mm-hmm.
And you noticed that the more creative they were, heroin.
It was, you know, here's the thing. I think that their creativity, they were able to, through their creativity, they were able to become very successful. I think that the success did not change any of those or help them with any of the problems they had when they were younger that probably pushed them into this career.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of people, most people, maybe not most, but a lot of people who go into entertainment do so because they're looking for attention, because it's a way of getting attention. It's a way of becoming the popular kid. Most kids pick up playing guitar because they want the girls to notice them, and this
right.
is the number one way in that, you know, in that time frame to get noticed.
But you know what? That's okay. And what I think I want to talk about a little bit too is when I talked before about isolating, right? That if you get your kids into a musical instrument, if they're musically inclined, if they're, you know, their creativity is amazing in
mm-hmm.
that area, how that can help them when it comes to talking to other people as
right.
well.
Well, I think that anything you can get kids into that they're passionate about, that you can encourage them, saves them from getting involved in something negative.
Right.
I mean, whether it be the Live from 205, you know, binding. Well, the thing with the Live from 205 is that school programs, it was a great way of binding them to
school.
The school.
Right.
But just as far as life is concerned, just getting kids, if a kid's interested in music, give them that instrument, get them those lessons. I know that my daughter, youngest, was most interested in dance, and so she was given, you know, dance lessons, and along with dance lessons come the practicing and dance lessons and practice, and soon she realized that she had to really take care of herself in order to continue with that.
Right.
And so that kind of kept her out of a lot of negative things that she could have possibly gotten into.
Right.
I think when somebody does an instrument, that's important too. Believe it or not, although we didn't discuss this earlier, there's a gentleman in Los Angeles who spent time in prison who has started a pigeon club. And he's running around grabbing these kids out of gangs, giving them pigeons, because it gives them something
to do.
To do.
Right. A passion. Yeah, I know. It's very, it makes both of us cry when we think about all these kids that, you know, are in the inner city and they're lost. And kids not even in the inner city, kids from very wealthy families
that
are lost. They feel so lost.
They just need something that they're to become passionate about. And a lot of times they don't even know it themselves, so it's good for them to be exposed to different things. But when there is something that they're passionate about, it's really important for you, the parent, to guide them in, to encourage them into doing it, not make them feel badly about it.
Right.
But to make it a positive thing and encourage them to pursue it. Because when you have that, then that passion you're pursuing leads you into other areas and tends to keep you out of the negative aspects. Like, you can't be stoned out and do and be involved following something you're passionate about.
No. But let me say something else, too. And I say this to a lot of parents, and at times it can be difficult to hear, but you've got to stop making your children's school experience about you. You've got to let them make it about them. You know, we all already went to high school. Most of us went to college. I went to graduate school. A lot of people went to graduate school. You need to allow that experience to be about them and not about you. So don't live through your children. So if your children, you know, aren't bringing home the straight A's, that's okay. If they're clean and sober, let me tell you something, that's a gift. That's a tremendous gift. And the more positive that you can be with them, the less chance there is for them to go off and do these things. Because I promise you that 99% of the reason why this happens is low self-esteem. My son, when he's ready, will tell you himself that he saw himself as very narcissistic and grandiose. Why? Because he was feeling so badly about himself, he needed to present the mask to everybody. And the mask was, I'm great, I'm wonderful, there's nothing wrong with me. Now through AA, he's learning a lot about that whole process, and he tells me that there's a lot of people with, you know, issues with personality things in AA because of all the distorted way of thinking with the drinking. Here's the number one thing you can do for your child to help them stay sober, your adolescents and the adults in your life as well. And the number one thing is, you know what, they need to know they're loved. They need to know they're loved and they're accepted for who they are. That is such an important thing, because if they feel that they're not loved because they're not doing well in school or because they're not doing something that you want them to do and they're not doing, that's not unconditional love. That's called conditional love. And that's something that's it's not good. We want to feel like we're loved unconditionally. So let me just talk a little bit about treatment, okay, because I think that this is really important. And my number one thing when a parent comes to me and says, I need you to fix my child, well, first of all, I don't fix anybody. I give people tools, and hopefully, you know, those tools help them if they use them to get better. But what I do is I normally remove the child or the adolescent and bring the parents in, because there's a problem with the family system when something isn't working right. So everybody has a part in this, not only the person that in family system we would call the IP, the identified patient, it's the entire family system that needs to be put back together, and the hierarchy needs to be, which are the parents, excuse me, need to be in the right place, excuse me. Okay, so when I bring the parents in, what I work on is communication and how to speak to your child or your adolescent productively. Communicating is something in our world that can be very, very difficult. I'll also do this a lot with couples that I work with. And even if one of the couples is struggling with alcoholism or drug abuse, we'll talk a lot about, you know, how to talk to each other. So talk to your child and adolescents about what I said before, the dangers of drugs and alcohol. Tell them, talk to them in depth about the history in your family. This disease is an incredibly powerful disease, and for those of you who love Dr. Drew, you can look him up and you can hear him talk about the power of the disease and how it completely distorts the thought process and how important it is to get into treatment. So the disease includes compulsive lying. So when you see your ADHD child lying, did you do your homework? Yes, I did, when you know they didn't. That doesn't mean that they are an alcoholic or a drug addict, but you want to really nip that, okay? You want them to understand that lying in your house is really unacceptable. I used to tell my boys, if you tell me the truth, there will not be a consequence, but if you lie, there's going to be a consequence because we can't communicate with each other productively if we're going to lie to each other. And so that's something that you really want to think about when their impulsivity, and that's a big part of this, causes them to lie. I know as a child, if my parents would ask me, is your homework done? Yes. Meanwhile, it was not done. Please, again, don't live in denial. I talked before about if you sense a change in your child, find out what's going on. Don't stop searching. Don't stop searching. If you find out that there's something going on, that they are truly smoking marijuana, that they are drinking, get them in a program. I'm not talking about inpatient right away, but find a really good program in your area to get them in so that they're there most days. They most likely will, with this program, have to go to AA. And here's the biggest piece of advice I can give to everybody who's listening. Get to Al-Anon, okay? Al-Anon helps you take care of you. So, for example, when I would find Chris's marijuana years ago, I would throw it out. I would just dump it out. What I found in Al-Anon is throwing out alcohol down the sink or marijuana or drugs doesn't do anything. It actually increases the behavior. So when you start taking care of you, then you're not enabling anymore this person in your life who is drinking or smoking marijuana or doing drugs or gambling. What you're doing is you're taking care of you and you're focusing in on you. You're not focusing on the other person. I discovered through a friend of Steve's who had been in the program for 25 years in AA. He talked to me for a long time, actually a couple of times. It was so nice of him to do, and made me see that I was feeding my son's disease by the behaviors, by checking in on him and asking him what he was doing and are you going here and are you going there and what are you doing and what. It was horrible. So even though I had been in Al-Anon years ago for 2 years, I decided, like I told you at the beginning of the program, I'm back in Al-Anon. And here's something I really want everybody to hear this because this is important. Al-Anon can help with all different kinds of behaviors with your children. So even if your children are not drinking or smoking, if you're having a control issue that you're constantly a helicopter parent, remember, there is absolutely no chance of internal motivation without autonomy. So if you're constantly hovering over your children, I would suggest you might want to get to Al-Anon and just take some of the principles there that might really help you to really stop trying to control everything and more coach your children, because that's really an important piece of this. And, you know, again, something else I just want to keep saying, do not let your children run the house, because that is a big one. It's a very, very dangerous thing to do. They'll feel trust. They may start using drugs and alcohol to start to self-medicate, and many of us in this population do self-medicate, and a lot of it is if we're feeling like our body's going 150 miles an hour and we don't have any way to slow down, alcohol is a depressant. Marijuana is a depressant. So it can help us to slow down, but it can also make us feel depressed. And the interesting thing is my son, who has bipolar disorder, he has been depressed now for about a year and a half, and since he's been clean for over a month, his depression is starting to lift. It's interesting. Even with the medications he was on, he was still feeling very depressed, but now he's beginning to feel much better. I can hear it in his voice when I speak to him every day, and he's hopeful that at some point he may be able to wean off some of this medication, and he may well be able to do that because he doesn't have the kind of bipolar where he has the very high manic episodes or low depression. He's got the kind where it's less of a manic and less of depression. So, you know, down the road, he might be able to do that. He may also be able to find his passion at some point and then decide what he wants to do and get back to school because he has never finished college, which is fine with me at this moment. His job right now is to work his program and to stay clean. So that is something that I really wanted everybody to know about the treatment. But treatment is really important, and you can't treat them yourself if they are truly addicted. You can't do that. If they're not yet addicted, if you think your child's smoking marijuana or drinking, as I said before, drug test them. If they are, then you're just going to keep doing it every week. Don't let them know when you're going to do it because there's ways to block it, and you don't want that to go on and to happen. So run your house. You're the parents. I'm on a mission to really help everybody where addiction is concerned. So,
well, you know, I think it's really important that parents know that, look, I mean, most of us were all raised in the 60s and some of us in the 70s, and we're all, there's this thing in society about marijuana, and marijuana's not that bad. And the thing is this, look, I have friends that have thank God every day that they have their medical marijuana card because they've suffered from cancer, they've
right.
suffered from a number of things.
Right.
Nobody's saying
they're adults.
They're adults. There's nobody saying that this isn't can't be a helpful tool in helping people. However, young children, they're not. It's not helping them do anything. It's abuse.
Right.
And as a parent, I know that it seems uncool because every place you go, turn on the television, listen to the radio. It's uncool to think that it should be kept against the law and that children shouldn't be using it. But the fact is, and countless times we see the proof that children should not be engaged in using these drugs.
Right.
We have to, as parents, do something about it.
Yeah.
It's sad that everything on every show on TV wants to promote it as if it's a joke and it's okay. And, you know, everything has its proper place.
You know what, it's really sad. You know what I just recently heard is that crime has been on the rise in Colorado, and I find that very interesting since marijuana is legal there. And I don't know, and please don't hate me, anybody who has a marijuana card and thinks, you know, that it's really helping them. As adults, if there's something very seriously wrong and your doctor has recommended this, because some do, but I don't know how true it is.
I have friends who suffer from chronic pain, and they
yes.
thank God every day that they have this ability
yes.
to do this.
But I'm just saying, I don't know if there is a correlation between the increase in crime in Colorado and marijuana use, but it very well could be. I don't know. But the other thing is, you turn on the TV, and I guess recently I'm just beginning to notice this, is everybody's drinking. I mean, we were talking about this the other day,
mm-hmm.
that every advertisement and the people that are going to the party and bringing four bottles of vodka.
Yeah, they're
instead of just one bottle of
yeah.
vodka or no bottles of vodka. But it seems like everybody...
Oh, it's flavored, though.
Oh, it's flavored, yes. Everybody has to drink, excuse me, I guess, in order to, you know, have a good time and fit in. But you know what? There is a different way to live, but since it's in your face all the time, it's very difficult to, I guess, many people to say no to it.
Well, yeah, it makes it difficult to say. It makes it difficult for us as parents to take a stand and create that boundary for our children because, you know, it was interesting. When I grew up, I was told that adults could drink but children could not.
I was too.
You know, the other thing is that growing up, on Sunday dinner in my home, I was able to have a glass of wine. I was told, look, we're giving you a glass of wine. It wasn't a big glass of wine. You couldn't ask for another one, but you didn't feel the need to because you just, that would have been uncool. That would have been, you know, I don't know, irresponsible. Not irresponsible, that's probably the wrong word, but it just wasn't the thing that you did.
It wasn't allowed,
but.
But you know what, you made a point the other day too, and you know, along the lines of ADHD, we tend to live in extremes,
right?
Okay, and so I try every day to, and I do a pretty good job of living my life in the middle because I'm emotionally regulated without using anything because of mindfulness and meditation. It's a powerful thing. It really is. In fact, I just found out, now that was just an ADD move because I moved on to something else, but I will get back to what I was talking about in a minute. I just found out that AA has added what they call the 11-step meeting. So once you're up to the 11th step, you can go to meditation meetings. So they're also seeing that this is a powerful tool. Staying in the moment is amazing, and it can really help the parents that are listening. Staying in the moment, not running to the future, it causes anxiety. Not going to the past causes depression. It's just powerful, and it causes neuroplasticity, which is actually what happened to myself. And we're going to continue to do programs on that as well, so you'll hear more about that. But here's what Steve and I were talking about the other day. In Europe, drinking, in many places in Europe, drinking is looked at in a different sort of way, I guess. You were saying, since your dad was born in Italy, that from the time they were little kids, they had wine on the table.
Right.
But that everything there is done in moderation.
Exactly.
So, like, when you go to Europe, and I can't say I'm a world traveler. The only place I've ever been is India. God help me, that was a scary trip. And Belgium. And what I did notice was that the amount of food that they put on the plate was tiny compared to, oh, my God, you know, I love the Cheesecake Factory, but have you ever seen the size of the plates?
Yeah,
like you could feed a third world country with the plate they put in front of you, right? I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it's like the more we eat, the more we want. And our eyes can be bigger than our stomach, right? I mean, right. That was one of my older son's issues when he was growing up. We'd go out to eat, and he would want everything on the menu, and he would never finish it. So my point of the story is, in America, everything is excess, mm-hmm. excess, excess. So that's food. And that's alcohol, and they always – it makes me laugh on these alcohol
– it's everything. Clothing,
commercials when they say drink responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what does that mean? When the drinks are so big that you can probably take a bath in them, you know? I mean, no, I'm serious. So it's such a different world,
right,
here.
Right, but also the point I think you were getting around to is that in Europe they teach children how to drink. And that may sound, that's a strange concept in America because they go, what are you talking about? Teach somebody how to drink. Everybody knows how to drink it. No, there's so much pressure of the family unit within their society, in the way, if you turn on the television, the way things are talked about, the way the general demeanor towards certain subjects, to be drunk, to be out of control from alcohol is a shameful thing.
Yeah.
And it's taught that way. It's not glorified. It's not made to look cool or funny or hip or anything. It's looked down upon. And most people, growing up in Europe, seem to have this different attitude. It's more of an attitude of like, well, I'm not going to do something. If I'm going to have a drink, it's going to be in moderation. And many a time I've been with foreign businessmen, it's like, no, I've had enough.
Right.
Now, I don't know a single American that would say, no, I've had enough. Give me another double.
But here's the thing, though. If you think about it, and this is why it's so important for everybody to hear this, that's the ADD impulsivity, too. And if the majority of the alcoholics and addicts out there, you know, have attention deficit disorder and have to learn how to live their life in the middle, they're the people that raise their hand and say, yes, I'll have another.
Well, wasn't that something, though, when you were working with at the clinic?
Yeah, right.
Didn't you find this? I remember you coming home saying, this is just so fascinating that there isn't one person that I'm dealing with. And I don't know how many people you must have seen a day.
A lot. Like
and
eight.
Every one of them was ADD.
Yeah.
And they'd never been diagnosed. And
no.
We would say, gee.
Because I would tell them about it. And they would go, oh, my God, that's me, you know. And there's a lot of people in the prison population that have ADD. Somebody wrote me on Facebook. I think it was a guy from England today. And it was just really hard to read because he was labeled as an addict. And he was reading about the symptoms of ADD and would go to his psychiatrist and say, you know what, I think I have ADD. And they would poo-poo it. And, you know, a lot of people say it doesn't exist. I'd like to meet those people, because it does exist. It's very real. It's a neurobiological disorder, and you know what? It can really do some harm to us if we don't get the tools at a young age to, number one, embrace it. I mean, instead of, like, being negative about it, let's be positive about it. That's what parents need to do. Let's be a role model and you know, show our children what it's like to be positive about something, because it's not a death sentence. And, you know, if we stay on top of it and we help them to embrace it and really get in control of their negative symptoms, mindfulness is used for children all the time, and it can be extremely successful. I use it, teach kids how to meditate, and it can be fun. You know, these are the kind of things that, you know, you got to understand that a lot of the addicts that are out there and alcoholics, they do have attention deficit disorder. There's some of them that don't. I'm not saying every single person I ever came in contact with, but many of them did.
Certainly all the ones you came in contact with at the clinic.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was for what? How long were you working?
18 months.
18
yeah.
months.
That's
a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. And they would say, yeah, that was absolutely me, but nobody ever diagnosed me or picked it up or, you know, said that. And they don't realize, I think a lot of professional people don't realize that this can really be a danger zone. It can be a red flag. I've seen myself with clients doing this for 21 years. I've seen a lot of kids and adolescents that end up doing this. And I know growing up myself, as I look back and I think about my friends that had ADD, they didn't know when you and I were growing up in the Stone Age what that was about,
mm-hmm.
right? Attention deficit disorder, what was that, you know? So we were just labeled lazy, stupid, you know, procrastinator, and you know.
We couldn't sit down, we couldn't sit still, and we couldn't shut up.
Yeah, and that really hurt our self-esteem, you know? And so that's why there's a lot of people our ages that struggle with alcoholism, too, because, you know, that was very difficult to hear from people that we were all, and so we didn't. You and I both struggled with the whole school thing.
Right.
I remember when I first saw your report cards from third grade when we were dating and you brought them over for me to look at. I said, wow, I could have helped you. This everyone said, can't sit still, can't focus. And
yeah, and it's there through the grace of God that it didn't become an addiction with anything. Like I said, one of the things that as an adult I knew that I had that I could become an addict at anything.
Right.
I think the one thing that helped me greater than anything else as a kid, not getting addicted to anything, was the fact that my parents grounded me for
3 years.
For 3 years.
That was so funny.
And I tell you,
but those of you who are listening, don't do that.
Yeah, I don't. I don't recommend this because believe me, I hated them for it, and I hated every moment of it for a long time, until I finally realized that the kids that I had been hanging out with, that I had moved on and I had developed new and different interests and developed in a number of ways. And as I'd spend time with them, when I'd spend time with them at school, I'd realize that they hadn't moved past where they were months ago.
Right.
And so I think that was a big aid, and it also helped me come to spend time with myself
Which
and get
great.
To know more about who and what I was rather than always looking for acceptance in other people.
Right. You know, and one of the things, I had clients this morning, and one of the things, I have a couple that I see on Sunday mornings, and we were talking about today about the difference between understanding money today versus how we were brought up. And when we were brought up, my father, although he was very successful and did very well, he would always tell me, hey, money doesn't grow on trees, and I had to go to work, and you know, when I was in high school, I had a part-time job, and he wanted me, not because, you know, I needed it to live, he wanted me to learn the value of a dollar. And we were talking this morning about, again, this is the extreme of life, you know, giving your children an allowance for nothing. Okay, here's $30 for the week. What do they do? Like, first of all, I'm a firm believer that kids should help around the house just because we're a family. Okay, and as a family, we do things. My boys would clear the table at night. Their job was to put the garbage out. You know, I mean, they had different things that they would do. I didn't give them an allowance, but if they wanted to go out to the movies, I'd throw them some money to go to the movies. My oldest son always worked. It was just pretty incredible. From the time he was 11, he was washing dishes at a restaurant because the restaurant people really loved him. It was in a town in New Jersey where we lived, and he really wanted to do it, and he made some money, and I remember the first paycheck that he got, he came home and he, it wasn't a paycheck, it was cash. He came home and he wanted me to take him to the mall so he could spend it on everybody in the family, which was just pretty incredible. But he learned a lot about the dollar, you know, and then he ended up now in, you know, the addiction of gambling, but he recognizes, I think now as he's going through recovery, that that was just it's a real sickness, and it can really grab you and can really just turn you upside down. It can destroy families, and, you know, but we were talking this morning about helping children understand money, because if they don't, I mean, let's face it, your daughter, your younger daughter, she talks about her expensive taste.
Mm-hmm.
And her important thing is designer shoes, designer bag. And you know what? I saw a quote last week that said, that's not what makes you happy. But for some reason, that's where she goes because mm-hmm. that's important to her. Now, I know it's a lot of it is because of what happened to her with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of kids out there like that. And they want.
And it's just another form of addiction.
Exactly.
That's all
they get, they get. And that's feeding the addiction. You don't feed that. You do not feed that. And I, you know, I see that. And I love Stephanie. She's amazing. She's going to do amazing things in her life. But I think she's caught up in that little bit of an addiction of that makes me feel good for mm-hmm. the moment. Going out and buying something is going to make me feel good.
I think that's something that can happen to just about anyone.
Absolutely.
Who has that addictive personality, and I think we all do. All us ADD people, I think addictive, the statistics were there, what, between 8 and 40% or so? I mean, really, I can see that.
Yeah.
We all have that, and something makes us feel good, we naturally want to do it again and more and often.
And I certainly was guilty of that. In my early 20s, I would go buy things without looking at prices and, never have enough money to pay my rent. So, you know, that's another issue in the world of ADD is, you know, the addiction of buying things. And money is a big issue for us because we get impulsive. So we do things impulsively without thinking first, you know. And that's also an issue. But it's all about extremes. And that's what I think we come back to all the time. Is the extreme of, like, you know, my son was sharing with me that, you know, other people would go to Vegas and put a quarter in a down or a dollar down on the table, and he'd have to put $75 down. It's not funny. Mm-hmm. It's just that's the extreme. That's the impulsive. That's I'm going to win. Eventually, he lost, and he ended up losing everything, walking away with no money at all. So, you know, this is all things that we have to be aware of and we have to look at in our children. Please be aware of the whole idea of the bottomless pit of I want this, I want that. Can I have this? Can I have that? And if you work and you're guilty, 9 times out of 10, you're going to end up buying for them because of the guilt, when in reality, we need to teach them the importance of understanding money.
Not only that, but you also have to give them, help them get the self-esteem that you get when you get something for yourself or when you earn something.
Exactly.
And that's really a vitally important thing that I think gets missed a lot, is giving children the opportunity to feel that feeling of self-esteem of something that they've accomplished.
Right. Now,
accomplishments are really important.
Now, here's something else that you and I, both of us did this when we were parents. I would do a lot of things for my kids because of a lot of my own guilt in my husband, their stepfather, who, God, I hope he's listening, was the biggest asshole in the world, okay? And he really, really hurt my boys, really hurt them. So because of that, and you felt the same way
mm-hmm.
because of who Stephanie's mom, okay? Mm-hmm. So what we did was we did a lot for them instead of allowing them to do things for themselves.
What we did is we tried to overcompensate. We didn't think it was overcompensating. We thought we were just compensating for
right.
somebody else's bad
right.
behavior.
Right.
But what we should have been doing is saying, see that? That's really bad behavior. Now you still need to do this X, Y, and Z.
Right, and we didn't do that.
And we didn't do that.
And I think I've said this before on the show, but I'm going to say it again. My younger son, who's very funny and on the autistic spectrum, took him to dinner when he came to Los Angeles about, I don't know, 9 months ago. And he, of course, you'll all love this, says to me, you know, I want to tell you something you did wrong. Well, thanks, Mike. I love this. You know? He said, I want to tell you that you absolutely did too much for me growing up. And I said, okay, all right, I accept that. Mike, let me ask you a question. When I would ask you to do something, he said, yeah, yeah. And I would say, no, it was manipulation. And you fell for it. See,
yeah, all
he
those faces,
said,
the rolling eyes, the little smirks, the, but mom, all that was
right.
manipulation.
He wouldn't even say that. He'd just give me a sad face.
Oh.
And he knew that I always bought into his sad face. So he told me this, he said, because he said, I want you to help other clients. Seriously, I want other clients to know that when their kids do that, they need to push. And they need. If you had pushed, then I would have left the house knowing how to do my laundry. And I didn't. He does now, although he throws everything in one.
Or knowing how to cook. Or
yeah,
know.
Yeah, exactly. All those things that I was guilty of not teaching. And a lot of it, and be aware of this for those of you listening who have ADD, is we, with ADD sometimes, instead of taking that extra time to teach, because that can be difficult for us, not all of us, but a lot of us, we'll just do it. We'll just do it. And then after that, the resentment.
Right.
Starts to build.
No, yeah, because we think, well, it's just rather than explaining it, I'm just going right. to get it done.
Exactly.
Rather than go through the craziness of, like, asking them to do it, them saying no, and having it escalate into an argument, I'm just going to do it.
Right. And I'll just get it done, and then this way, you know, it won't be an issue, and I can then move on with my day. No, you really need to take that extra time so that they're learning, and there's responsibility. That's a big part of it. You know, because that resentment that builds them, I see it when I have kids and their parents in, and the parents are angry at the kids, and the kids are angry at the parents, and, you know, communication. We need to learn how to communicate with each other.
I also think that it's really important for the parents to, as parents, create boundaries and feel secure as parents that they can and should maintain those boundaries.
Exactly.
And
right.
Instead of doubting themselves and thinking, well, and that old expression that kids do, but all my friends get to do it.
I love that one.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
But and a lot of it shakes the parents. I think, well, gee, you know, they hear it enough times, they start thinking, well, maybe I am being too hard. Maybe I need to be a little more.
No, they really need to be like my father, who would say, really? They don't live in my house. I don't care. This is what I say goes in this house. I don't care what other people do. You know, I mean, really, we were angry growing up when they would say things like that. But the reality of it is, if it wasn't for my dad, I would be dead. Because I was pretty wild. Mm-hmm. And I had the fear. He put the fear of God in me.
Mm-hmm.
That if I ever got into trouble and had to face him, you wouldn't want to do that. You know, and God rest his soul, because you know, he was really a good person and did the best he could. And you know what? We all do. We all do the best we can as parents. And I just want everybody to know I'm here if anybody needs any help. I'm on Facebook. I have a Miss ADD page and the Miss ADD group page where people are now beginning to write and blog. And, you know, I'm going to try to get into more writing on that page. I've been busy with that.
I think one of the things that we want to leave people with is that, look, we're not trying to tell people that they've done it, that they're doing it wrong and that they're wrong. What we're trying to do is saying, look, we're trying to share what we've learned from our own mistakes, not just the mistakes that we've, you know, that you deal with, but the mistakes that we've all had as parents that have children that have now gone into young adulthood.
Right.
And as we look back, you know, that eyesight's always 20/20, and we're able to see our shortcomings.
Right.
And a lot of times, and that's kind of what the basis of this show is, we're trying to look back and say, hey, here's my 20/20 vision of what I saw. I'm trying to let you know, Mr. Parent, who has a 6-year-old,
right,
a 10-year-old, a 12, 15, 17-year-old, this is what I heard, and this is what I did, and that wasn't completely right. Some of it was terribly wrong, and here's something that you need to maybe learn from my mistake, because there's the result, the
right,
result of children becoming becoming addicts. When it all started, it didn't start overnight. It started at home.
Right.
It started at home under your care.
And there's red flags. There are red flags all over the place with
kids.
And
we just don't see them.
And when you see that extreme behavior in children, that's a red flag. You know, the interesting thing was when I spoke with my son this morning, because we really try to talk every day now, which is great, just for a few minutes, he actually calls me most of the time just to check in, and he's been really great, and I love him for that. I love him for unconditionally for everything. And he told me this morning, because he knew I was doing this show, to make sure that I let everybody know that you really have to grab this early on. And if you're seeing early on 13, 11, let me see. I heard last week from somebody else that a 7-year-old was smoking marijuana, got a hold of it because it was in the house. So whatever age it is that you're seeing anything, any kind of change, you, from my son, grab a hold of it. Get in control of it. Do something about it. Don't allow this to grow. Not an inch. Because if you allow that, then you're going to end up having a child, and you don't want this, because I can tell you firsthand, it's been years of not sleeping, of really, really worrying. And your children are your most precious commodity, your adolescents, your children, the adults out there who are listening about this. I promise you that in the next couple of weeks, I really want to spend some time focusing on this. I'm going to try to get some really big experts on to talk about, you know, maybe some people from L.A. who have rehab places. I'm going to do some research myself and find some people that can really give us some answers. And the lines are always open for people to call in.
Not only that, but also the Al-Anon facilities, because, you know, it's one thing to be an addict. It's another thing to know people that are addicts, having children that might be addicted to something. But part and almost equally important of that behavior is the codependent behavior that enables it,
yeah,
which is why,
and that's why
that's really important for us, right, who aren't addicts to know what not to do.
And that's what I was telling
what to help and what not to do that makes it worse.
And so Mr. ADD, who wasn't listening, that's what I was telling everybody before that Al-Anon. But that's okay. That was great. I'm glad you brought that up. We're actually in an hour going to an Al-Anon meeting, which is an hour and a half meeting, and he's so right. And as I said before, you really have to learn how to deal in this world. And so having some experts on that can help us with this will be great. I work with people with addiction. I'm not an expert in addiction, and I'm certainly not an expert with my son. I'm an expert in the world of ADHD. I truly am. I've been doing this for 21 years, and so with all the co-occurring disorders, and because I went to graduate school and got my master's in clinical psychology, and I'm an MFT, I do understand depression and anxiety and bipolar and personality disorders, but, you know, my true passion is ADHD, because I love everybody. I love us all, because we're wonderful people. We're so creative. We're so amazing. We are an elite population. And so I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen next week. I'm trying to figure out how to get somebody on in this world, because I really would like to stay here for a little while so that we really get a feel for this. And you know, for those of you who are struggling with it, you've got a place to come every Sunday for a while to get information, and you can call in. That's what I was going to give you. The number again is 917, area code 889-7025. So not for today, because we're going to be signing off, but in the future, anytime you want to call in, we're here for you. I'm here for you. Two Facebook pages. I've got a website. You can go and look at what I do on my website, and missadd.com. And I'm also available for Skyping or available for phone sessions or Skyping sessions, whatever you need. If you don't live in the Los Angeles area, I'm here, and I want to do everything I can to help. So I love everybody that's listening, even you who are not. If you can't hear us today, you can listen to us on iTunes for free tomorrow, JustineRotolo/MissADD, or Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/MissADD. So I want to wish everybody a wonderful Sunday. I'm sorry, we will not be here next Sunday because it's Mother's Day. And that's the Sunday where people are doing things with their moms. So happy Mother's Day to everybody who's listening. We'll be back the following Sunday, and it will be some type of show on addiction, and hopefully get somebody on here that can really answer any questions that you may have. Okay, have a great Sunday. Stay in the moment, and I will be seeing you or talking to you in 2 weeks. Take care.